ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's really upsetting that after all of these years and my whole life of being in the industry and priding ourselves on what we do, the government's trying to shut down this, you know, precious resource that we have.
Shortly, we'll head to Queensland, where the state and federal governments are committed to phasing out gillnet fishing in the Great Barrier Reef by mid-2027. We'll hear from fisheries on why the phase-out is needed and from the fishing and seafood industries about their concerns for the future. And 2 weeks ago, the small town of Merbau North was ravaged by severe storms, but the local community was quick to respond.
My best mate and I, we got pulled up at the hall with a couple of chainsaws, and basically that's when it started. People just walking past. Hey, are you okay? Can we help? Yeah, mate.
I'm Alex Hyman, and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk country, Perth. But firstly, after almost a week of searching for the bodies of Jesse Baird and Luke Davies, police have today announced they've found the remains of the missing Sydney couple. The discovery was made on a property in regional New South Wales. Speaking to the media this afternoon, New South Wales Police Commissioner Karen Webb says the men's families have been informed about the breakthrough.
It is an important time in this investigation that we now know, we believe, we're very confident that we have located Luke and Jesse.
Police officer Beau Lamar Condon has been charged with two counts of murder over the men's deaths and remains in custody. Also speaking to the media today, New South Wales Detective Superintendent Daniel Doherty outlined how today's events unfolded.
This morning, homicide squad detectives spoke to the accused. As a result of that, he provided assistance to the investigation. We were able to provide a location of where Luke and Jesse were. As a result of that, about 1 o'clock, today, homicide squad detectives attended a location off Durrara Road at Bungonia. It's about 20 minutes from the original search location, where they have located what they believe are the remains of Luke and Jesse. There are two surf bags have been found, some other, which has been covered with some debris. There's some other items of interest of significance that are also located. At that stage, it was declared a crime scene.
New South Wales Detective Superintendent Daniel Doherty speaking earlier today to the media.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
Let's head to Queensland now, where the gillnet fishing industry says they have reached a tipping point, describing the current conditions they operate under as unsafe and leaving the seafood industry worried for the future. 2024 marks the first of 3 years under which gillnet fishing will be phased out in the Great Barrier Reef World Heritage Area. Lucy Cooper has this story.
The Australian and Queensland governments have committed more than $160 million to phase out gillnet fishing in the Great Barrier Reef World Heritage Area by mid-2027. A decision, Sian Breen, the Director of Fisheries Management with Fisheries Queensland, says was based on evidence that gillnets pose risks to protected species.
Over a long period of time, there'd been concerns raised about gillnetting. And over a number of years, there has been many interactions reported with threatened species such as dugongs, also dolphins, rays, sea snakes, crocodiles, turtles, and from all of that science over, you know, 30 odd years, it suggested that there did need to be further actions taken to minimise the impacts on those species from gill netting.
Gill nets are long rectangular panels of netting that are held vertically in the water and anchored to the ocean floor at either end. Fish swim into the net and are entangled by the gills, fins and spines. The nets are kept vertical by the floats along the top and weights along the bottom. The phase-out of the use of these nets began on the 1st of February this year and was marked with the allocation of new NX licences, which allow gillnet fishers to continue for the next 3 years, but with new conditions. As of today, only 23 out of a possible 40 licences have been granted, a decision Queensland Fisheries says was actually prompted from industry consultation.
When we did some targeted consultation in regional Queensland with the fishers that would be interested in undertaking this kind of fishing, a lot of them raised concerns around concentrated fishing effort and competition between themselves in these regions. So they were very concerned that 40, in fact, may be too many to be granted in total, and they were keen to see a smaller number issued to deal with that potential conflict and competition. So with that in mind, Fisheries Queensland determined to probably, we'll end up issuing 30 altogether.
The decision to phase out gill nets haven't just left the fishing industry reeling, but also the seafood industry. Lucas Danzi owns North Shore Seafood Company in Townsville, which supplies wild-caught seafood caught by local fishermen. He's been involved with the industry for his entire life.
I grew up in a little town called Tincan Bay in southeast Queensland, so from the age of sort of six onwards, fishing, avid recreational fisherman, and then trawling life as well, so going to sea on the trawler, catching prawns and bugs and scallops and things like that, and really being indentured in the commercial fishing industry my whole life, and then later on having my shop and being able to have the dream of being able to supply that to people. And it's really upsetting that after all of these years and my whole life of being in the industry and priding ourselves on what we do, the government's trying to shut down this, you know, precious resource that we have.
Gillnet fishermen do supply his shop, and despite rising cost of living putting pressure on wallets, he said in recent years people are prepared to pay more for his seafood.
There's been a paradigm shift in the later years of people looking for a better quality and not necessarily caring so much for the price. We only supply local wild-caught seafood, therefore all of our options are the more expensive option. And as far as the Woolworths that's beside our business here, we actually sell more seafood than they do. And I think that's proof in the pudding that people are prepared to not only spend the money for a good product, but support our business over the top of a large retailer.
Lucas says decisions made by Fisheries Queensland are hurtful.
What hurts us the most is that we're very good at what we do, and we've been doing it our whole lives, and we can do it in a sustainable way. But when that's torn apart year after year with new legislations that don't even make sense, you know, to the industry itself, and that's what's super upsetting.
Sian Breen of Fisheries Queensland said the phase out of gill nets should not come as a surprise to the industry. Issues with protected species have been known since the 90s.
The gillnet issue and the interactions that they are known to have on dugongs and dolphins is not new. And so over a period of time, there have been quite a few deaths found, you know, dugongs found in places where they shouldn't be, held down, trying to, you know, fishers have tried to hide them in mangroves. Fortunately, that is very rare now, and that there was quite a spate of those some years ago. So that's not the behaviour that we currently see from our commercial fishers, which is really good, but it has happened in the past. And that does indicate that they most certainly do have interactions, and they can be lethal on those species.
In Townsville, Lucas Danzi said current regulations and reforms will mean in the future he'll have to supply imported seafood to his customers.
I'm actually really worried because, you know, as I said, my whole life I've done this, and the pinnacle of everything I've done has come up to be this shop, and my partner and I are very particular about the seafood that we have here only being local and fresh. So it's a very scary time to think that in the future, those individual items are going to disappear off the list, and we're going to be forced to basically sell imported seafood, and we don't want that at all.
That's Lucas Danzi, the owner of the North Shore Seafood Company in Townsville. Ending that report from Lucy Cooper. When storms tore through eastern Victoria 2 weeks ago, the small community of Merboo North found itself at the centre of the destruction. Roofs were torn off homes, trees were ripped out, and the town found itself, like much of the state, without power and communications. But the damage didn't stop a small group of community members from taking the reconstruction into their own hands. Millie Spencer has the story.
So I was just walking home through the bush, and I just see like some thunder and lightning, just looking like a normal thunderstorm. So I decide, well, I don't really want to walk in the rain, so I just keep walking, and I just hear these winds come in as I'm walking through the bush, and I get past the reserve that I was walking through onto our main road, and these what felt like 200 kilometre winds were just in my face with this hail and rain. I'm hearing trees crash down behind me, and I just can't take this hail like on my body and in my face anymore, so I've run behind a tree to get cover.
That's 14-year-old Zane Fleming from Merbury North recounting the wild storms which lashed the Victorian town earlier this month. The town surrounded by forest is known for its towering ancient trees, but after the storm came through on Tuesday, February 13th, Merbury North looked completely different. Residents were disconnected from the outside world for days, left without power and telephone service, so locals took it upon themselves to organise a clean-up response. Jess Healy led this response.
You know, after the storm happened, I saw a lot of social media people saying that we want to help, and I'm hearing a lot of people, we want to help, we want to do something, but what do we do? And everyone's reply was, I don't know. And obviously we've heard stories where people have just rocked in from other towns and they grabbed chainsaws and they've just started somewhere. So I'm seeing all those responses and I'm like, and I was talking to my housemate at the moment, who's also another veteran. We knew each other in the Navy about 25 years ago. I looked at each other and I said, we should organise this. Because about 4 years ago, during the East Gippsland fires, we went out there with Operation Veteran Assist. That was a group of veterans that went out. We were the first group in to go and help with immediate fencing issues and dangerous trees and things like that. So I thought, well, we could do the same thing here. Yeah, and that's how it all came about. So the first thing we did was I walked down the community centre and I just grabbed a piece of paper. If you need help, call me. And I just started from there.
The group called the community response team cleared the local RSL hall on the Friday after the storm and opened its doors to locals needing help the very next day.
So my best mate and I, we got pulled up at the hall with a couple of chainsaws, and basically that's when it started. People just walking past. Hey, are you okay? Can we help? Yeah, mate. So within an hour, 2 hours, I had four other people stop out of nowhere with their chainsaws and help us get in and clear a massive oak tree within half a day. So, yeah, we were in here by Friday afternoon and we could set up.
Within a week of opening the centre, the community response team had responded to 91 out of 202 jobs logged with them. One of the community members donating their time and resources to the response is Shay Goble, a local sawmill operator.
This town is known for its beautiful trees, and it's a shame to see, unfortunately, a lot of it probably going to end up in a chipper. So what I'm trying to do is go around and save as much of it as I can. We've got a lot of beautiful species here. We've got a lot of messmates and eucalypts, and we're lucky enough to have a lot of blackwood species around this area as well. So beautiful furniture-grade timbers, structural timbers as well. A lot of it's unfortunately damaged for structural use, but if we get a little bit creative, we can find some great ways to come up with some ideas. And ideally, I'd like to create something for the town.
Gippsland residents are no stranger to extreme weather events, and locals have been vocal in their requests for government to improve emergency responses. Solar consultant and former chief executive of RACV Solar, Andy McCarthy, says more needs to be done to put renewable energy at the epicentre of disaster recovery.
You know, when the rubber hits the road in the immediate aftermath of these emergencies, we need to think about getting, you know, standalone off-grid systems in to support these communities. It's the quickest way to get electricity back for storage of medicines and water and, like I said, you know, looking after injured wildlife. You know, in Merbury North, what we've discovered over the last week is that we couldn't communicate for at least 24 hours to tell people, like, it's really bad here. You cannot imagine the devastation we're dealing with. If we had an off-grid system in the middle of town on one of the buildings that was powering satellite internet, which we now have, we could have been transmitting and telling people what we're dealing with within 10 minutes. Well, I think that we should be building these systems and not putting band-aids on the problem afterwards. You know, I'm sick and tired of hearing unprecedented events. We're having a series of unprecedented events, which is an oxymoron. So, you know, fixing the problem is obviously important and trying to recover quickly. But then we have to think like it's Merbury North this time. But then, you know, it might be Tangill South next time, or it could be, you know, some other exposed community that has, you know, a lot of trees on the road in and out of town, and they're highly vulnerable to these events. So if we can have these systems in situ in small towns to power communications, that would take a lot of pain away from people. Like, you know, it's just like a lot of things in life. I think, you know, you take these horrible situations that we go through as an opportunity to learn, and we just try and make sure that every time we build back, that we build back better. And we think about how to make it easier for the next time that we have to deal with these horrible incidents.
Millie Spencer and Mim Hook with that story from Merbau North in Victoria.
ABC Australia Wide.
As property prices soar across the country, one region is experiencing the largest growth in Australia. It's not Sydney or Melbourne, but the Wide Bay on the coast of regional Queensland. The Wide Bay area includes Bundaberg, Hervey Bay and Maryborough, and is a few hours north of Brisbane. Which begs the question, what's going on in Wide Bay that's made the region so popular? Our reporter Grace Whiteside looked into it.
The latest figures from property data analyst CoreLogic shows property prices have jumped between 65 and 75% in the Wide Bay in the last 5 years. Analyst Simon Presley reckons the region has an incredibly exciting set of ingredients.
Job creation in the Wide Bay region, there's been a 23% increase in jobs over the last 4 years. For perspective, the capital cities have seen sort of between 5 and 10% job growth over that same four-year period of time. So it's an economic story, it's a lifestyle story, and it's a shortage of housing supply story.
Could you talk to me a little bit more about the lifestyle element?
Yes, well, Wide Bay is has always been very popular for internal migration, but popularity has increased over the last few years. The cost of housing combined with lifestyle is definitely a major draw card for someone looking to relocate from a big congested city such as Sydney and Melbourne, and to a lesser extent Canberra. You can still buy a really good quality, low maintenance house in the Wide Bay region for somewhere between $550,000 and up to $700,000. Now, if you're living in Sydney, you'd be flat out getting a pantry for that sort of dollars. So that is definitely a lure. And as we were talking about earlier, the weather, southerners absolutely love it. And who wouldn't?
Locals agree that the boom is down to the region's beaches, good weather and big backyards. Bundaberg builder Jake Chappell has experienced the growth at work and on a personal level.
I've recently sold another two properties in the last 2 years, I guess. It was nice being on the selling side. I feel sorry for some of these younger people coming through buying now, but I still think we're slowing down. I think the market in Bundaberg will continue to grow and increase in price.
What do you think it is about Bundaberg and the Wide Bay region that draws people here?
I think initially it was probably cheap land and cheap properties. Bang for buck was definitely up there. If you compare it to Sunny Coast, Gold Coast, Brisbane, that sort of stuff. Bundaberg has a lot to offer. People like the climate is always good. It's a bit hot at the moment, but usually it's pretty livable, pretty comfortable. We've got great beaches, yeah, and the great people and the lifestyle. I think it's all happening here.
The CoreLogic report shows Bundaberg's property values have soared almost 75% over the last 5 years to a median value of almost $480,000. Hervey Bay has experienced an increase of more than 67% to more than $615,000, and Maryborough has seen an almost 66% jump to almost $395,000. The Sunshine Coast took top spot out of regional Queensland for the highest median value at more than $965,000, overtaking the Gold Coast region, which is sitting at more than $928,000. Here's CoreLogic's head of research, Tim Lawless.
Well, generally when we see housing values rising, it's a simple mismatch between supply and demand. So at the moment, we're still seeing demand based on population growth in Queensland is very strong. Most of that is being driven by a combination of interstate migration, so more people coming into Queensland from New South Wales and Victoria in particular. But also, we're still seeing an ongoing trend of internal migration rates, where more people are, say, looking for regional housing or being driven to the regions because either jobs growth or housing might be more affordable. There's also a lifestyle trend as well. So a lot of this really strong growth has come through the pandemic itself. So through the worst of the pandemic, that's generally when we're seeing prices rising a lot more than they are at the moment. But of course, household incomes haven't risen anywhere near that level. So for anybody looking to get into the marketplace, obviously their income hasn't increased by, say, 75% in Bundaberg. It does mean that affordability is becoming more and more challenging as we see prices rise so rapidly.
Head of Research with CoreLogic, Tim Lawless, ending that report from Grace Whiteside in Bundaberg. When you watch young children play, it's interesting to see how quickly they can make friends. Unfortunately, as we age, it often becomes more difficult, and social isolation is something experienced by many older Australians. A women's health group in Bunbury realised that there were few places for senior ladies to get together, so they created a women's gardening group. It's not just about planting fruit and veg, but connecting and improving mental and physical health. Kate Stevens has the story.
There we are. Look at that.
Woo-hoo. The sun's beaming down at this community garden in Bunbury.
One each, yeah.
But the heat won't stop Maureen Cherry. She's inspecting the veggies.
Oh, wow, we better pick that. It's huge.
The garden is Maureen's happy place.
I love it. And you get in there and I never have nails because, you know, they get broken and all the rest of it. It's just part of me. I can't be not doing it.
Maureen spent practically her whole life in a garden. Then after she retired and moved to Bunbury a few years ago, she had to put her green thumb on ice.
I was living for 7 months on the farm my son is on. So I puddled around, but I couldn't do a lot.
That's when she stumbled across an ad for the Grounding Women's Gardening Group.
The gardening group did help me. It helped me when I, certainly when I first came down. It was a big move, I can tell you. It wasn't until I got here I realised what I'd done.
Yeah, oh, that'd be good.
Rebecca Titchborne has helped to run the program for the Southwest Women's Health and Info Centre. She says it's about more than just getting your hands dirty.
We did a survey which found that there, especially for older women, that there was a real lacking in our community for opportunities to socialise, meet new people, get out of the house, and also to do gardening. A lot of these women have downsized their homes into units and don't have their own little garden space anymore. So we found out about Tomo's Community Garden and that we could lease a plot here so we grow our own produce and share what we grow. And then we have an opportunity to have a cup of tea, a chat, some morning tea, some treats. Sometimes we do a little workshop, anything to do with women's well-being.
Beck reckons there's just something special about connecting in the garden.
So we have women from all sorts of walks of life. A lot of these women have mental health challenges, anxiety, depression, some have escaped domestic violence situations. So, yeah, we're kind of creating that safe space for them to come together, have a little chat and share their stories if they want to. But the beauty of being in the garden is that they don't have to talk if they don't want to. We've got a hands-on activity that they can join in with, whereas other sort of support groups often revolve around that talking and sharing.
The program has been running for 3 years and they've had great success so far.
One woman in particular, when she first came along, she was so introverted that she couldn't even tell me what her name was, and she just pointed it to her name on a list. And she's come out of her shell. She's now sharing with other people, and we've helped her to really build her life, I suppose, outside the garden as well. She now visits one of the other ladies and helps with her home garden. She's begun doing volunteer work at the Women's Health Centre to kind of give back, and that's been a huge progress.
For Maureen, the program has helped get her back into the garden, her happy place, where she can just talk to her plants.
I just talk to them like I talk to you. You know, you promised me that you'll grow, won't you? And I'm going to look after you and I'll give you a drink. And if you don't behave, you won't get that drink and you'll die. But see, I live on my own, and if anyone could hear me, they would really think that I was the dopiest thing around. But that's what gives me joy.
Maureen Cherry, ending that story from Bunbury reporter Kate Stevens. And that is Australia Wide for this Tuesday. I'm Alex Hyman. I hope you can join me again tomorrow. Have a wonderful evening. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.